Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Do you know your work entitlements? You might be someone who reads your work contract pretty closely, or the Fair Work Act to the absolute letter. I bet you're not, though. Most of us probably don't, do we? Or you might be pretty relaxed, actually, about the details of work conditions and think, well, if it's working for me, that's about as good as it's going to get. You see, maybe you should take a bit of a closer look at it, because just last month, a landmark ruling granted a casual worker annual leave. Now, he was a truck driver with Rio Tinto, and the full Federal Court of Australia ruled that despite the fact that he was employed as a casual, he in fact was not a casual under employment law because of his regular and continuous pattern of work. In other words, even though he's employed as a casual, he actually did the same work every week on a roster that didn't change from one year to the next, and he'd worked for nearly 2 years. Is that casual? No, they said. In response, unions and employer groups have said there needs to be a clearer definition of what a casual employee means. Yeah, maybe. Of course, legislation and entitlements vary from state to state, industry to industry, and employer to employer. So we'll give you the best advice we can. Obviously, we don't know the detail of every single regulation in every state, but we'll give you some general hints about your entitlements in the workplace. Alex Grayson is a principal lawyer who manages the employment and industrial relations practice of Maurice Blackburn Lawyers. She's got almost 20 years' experience in industrial relations and as a labour lawyer, and has joined us before in the program and joins us again this evening. Alex, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you for having me again.
Nice to have you back. Entitlements vary from state to state, aren't there? But there are things called Australia's National Employment Standards. Drum roll, please. The NES. Now, these are the minimum standards of employment, and they define such things as hours worked, annual leave, parental leave, and redundancy pay, which are standard. Now, we'll talk about those in a minute. But generally speaking, I don't want to put too much icing sugar on the cake, but generally speaking, Australia's working standards compared to the rest of the world aren't too bad, are they?
I think they're not too bad. I think one of the areas that we fall short on is human rights. We're not so keen to ratify international labour conventions. Certainly, we could improve in that regard. But we do have a very comprehensive set of regulation in the Fair Work Act, and you've referred to the National Employment Standards. Mm. They apply to almost all Australians. For example, in New South Wales, where you and I get to sit in beautiful Sydney, state public sector workers aren't covered by the bulk of National Employment Standards, nor are local government employees. So there are some pockets.
But they're covered by their own requirements.
They're covered by their own legislation, which doesn't necessarily have the same stringent levels of employment entitlements as those that are in the National Employment Standards. Australia has a really interesting, I kind of think of it as a bit of a wall of regulation and a set of building blocks. So at the very bottom, you have these National Employment Standards, and they set the kind of foundations. They apply to almost everyone in setting those minimum standards. On top of that, we have modern awards that then sit there and apply to a whole bunch of industries. I think there are over 111 of them, and they apply to particular industries, and they're kind of tailored to each industry. Mm-hmm. On top of that, you've got enterprise agreements, which are voted on. Often, you know, a bunch of employees in a workplace or an employer, a union will represent them. There'll be a negotiation conducted, and you'll get a binding enterprise agreement. And then we've got contracts that sit on the very top on that shaky wall of regulation.
Legally and constitutionally, who's got power to make laws in relation to work and work entitlements?
Again, varies from state to state, but
can the federal government make a law about how much annual leave you should get?
Yes, and they could, have
if
done.
They wanted to.
Yes, they have done. Right. That is exactly what they have
that's
done.
What and the, that's what the NES is.
That's exactly right. That sits in the National Employment Standards, so they can do that for the bulk of Australian employees, and they have done.
So the federal government's allowed to say no one can get less than 4 weeks leave.
Yes,
if you're a full-time worker.
Yes,
for example, which they've said. But they could do other things as well if they want.
Yeah, so those National Employment Standards are quite broad spectrum. So they cover things like annual leave, flexible working arrangements, unpaid parental leave. So they're quite broad. Personal carers leave, which is what we currently call sick leave, and also carers leave.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Well, let's get to those in a moment. If you don't like what's happened, with your entitlements, in general, what do you do about it, apart from complaining?
You talk to a good lawyer. Obviously, I think that's always my first answer. Make inquiries. Go to the Fair Work Ombudsman.
Speak to your union, I suppose.
Speak to your union. Do some research on the Fair Work Commission's website, on the Fair Work Ombudsman's website. They've got really good calculators for how much leave should I have, what are my entitlements, what are my entitlements in this industry, what should I be paid. I think the Fair Work Commission's website also has all of the modern awards and certified agreements, enterprise agreements as they're called these days, on the website. Talk to your colleagues. And then if you continue to have a concern, then it might well be that you go and raise that with human resources. And people should know it is unlawful in Australia to be subjected to some sort of adverse action, so termination, demotion, disciplinary action, change of rosters, examples, because you've made a complaint or inquiry in relation to your employment. So there is a protection at law if something terrible, it doesn't even have to be terrible, but some sort of adverse action happens to you because you've made that complaint or inquiry. But first step, I think, is talking to colleagues, talking to your union and doing that research. We have the great internet these days.
I don't want to sound like a naive fool, but the system sounds devilishly complicated. Is it? I mean, yes. It sounds devilishly complicated. What? How do we end up with such a complicated employment system?
It absolutely is. So if I compare the Fair Work Act, which, as I said, governs employment conditions for most of Australians, I think it has over 790 sections, and within that there can be hundreds and hundreds of other subsections. So we are talking, well, I have a book here. I think it's at least 2 inches thick, the Fair Work Act, double-sided. So, yes, ridiculously complicated, ridiculously labyrinthine. And if I compare that to the New South Wales Industrial Relations Act, which is a beautiful piece of crafted legislation, which kind of has, I think, in many ways, it's more simple for people to understand. Each act is different.
Let's talk about some of the main entitlements. Yeah. Annual leave. This is also known as holiday pay.
It is.
Is everyone entitled to holiday pay?
No. So casuals aren't entitled to holiday pay, but full-time and part-time employees.
When you say they're not entitled to it, does that mean that they're entitled to get paid in lieu of it?
No. So they're not entitled to it. I mean, what I should say is that it is factored into the casual loading that they get. So casuals will get 25% casual loading. So it's, if you like, been set off and bundled into that.
Is that set
loading
in stone?
It's in modern awards, it's in enterprise agreements, and it's a standard.
But if you work as a casual employee, you've got to get 25% more than the standard hourly rate.
That's exactly right, in the majority of workplaces. Yeah, and it's intended to, if you like, compensate you for not getting that annual leave, for having that precarious employment, for not getting redundancy pay, for not getting notice of termination.
Do you get sick leave for that?
No. Casuals don't get sick leave either. They do get 2 days of unpaid carer's leave if they need to look after someone. So if they have a member of their family who becomes ill, they can access some entitlement. But casuals don't really have paid entitlements. But really interestingly, there has been a very recent decision, which you alluded to in your intro, which is the WorkPac decision, where the federal court actually looked at this gentleman. And
just run it through again. I mean, I summarised. It was an accurate summary. He was a FIFO truck driver.
I thought he'd been there for 4 years, but you could well be right. Anyway, for a very long period of time, when you think of a casual, and what a casual is meant to be is somebody who works irregularly, you know, not systematically, who is called in on short notice because Johnny hasn't turned up to do his shift. That is the original concept of casuals. Now, what we're seeing is they're being used in the way that this gentleman was. So he worked, whether it was 2 years or 4 years, systematically, regular shifts on-site other people who were called permanent employees. And essentially what the federal court says, looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's an employee, a permanent employee, essentially. They found that he wasn't a casual because of the way that he was employed. So just because he was called a casual wasn't sufficient. He was entitled to annual leave.
Even though he was getting the 25%.
That's right. Yeah.
So they said, even though you're getting the 25%, we find that you're still entitled to annual leave.
Yep. This person was not a casual.
I mean, I don't want to take sides with anyone here, but I mean, are employers a bit right to be a bit cheesed about this? Because they would say, hang on, we were paying him the extra 25%. How come he's now getting annual leave on top of that?
The 25% is, as I said, it's there to compensate for a whole bundle of things, in part annual leave, including the incredibly precarious nature of casual employment. That is, from one day to the next, in most circumstances, a casual employee can have their employment terminated, unless there are, you know, protections around that. So it's an incredibly difficult role.
That's true. This sometimes suits a lot of people, though, doesn't it, who don't necessarily want to be... it also allows people to leave immediately, too.
I don't reckon it's that hard to leave your employment myself. I see a lot of people that do it regularly. I reckon it suits uni students. When I think about... who suits casual, proper casual employment, it ain't an adult who wants a mortgage and who's got kids.
No.
It is not the bulk of Australian employees, but it is becoming a more standard form of employment, this kind of pretend casual who's been sitting there for 4 years next to his mates doing the exact same thing with regular rosters, systematically employed, an expectation of ongoing employment, and that was essentially this gentleman's situation.
Yeah, I don't want to hammer the case, but the argument... the argument is that, yes, that's true, but they are getting paid extra for this.
They're getting paid minimally extra.
25%.
I don't think that's that much to when this gentleman was not...
No, I hear what you're saying, but that's the...
And this gentleman just wasn't a casual, coming back to basics. He was no casual. He was no, Johnny, can you do the coffee shift on a Friday night? He was not that person. He was engaged 4 years regularly and systematically. And to some extent, this gets built into employers' models. So instead of engaging people permanently and giving them secure employment, giving them all the entitlements of a workplace, allowing them to easily get a mortgage and plan what their finances look like, this is becoming a model which is kind of being, I think, overused by employers. We have moved away from the true concept as it was originally adopted in Australia of casual employment. And it is very rare overseas. It is not common world over to have casual employment, especially not casual employment the way that we have it in Australia.
Because what you're saying, really what employers are getting here is... they're getting a kind of, they're paying a bit extra, the 25%, but in return, they're getting this incredible flexibility where they don't owe anything to anybody. As long as they pay you the 25%, they can employ you full time for years without having to pay anything.
I get
the point. Annual leave. So the National Employment Standard says if you're entitled to annual leave, you can't have less than 4 weeks a year if you work full time. Is that right?
You accrue 4 weeks a year. You don't need to take 4 weeks every year.
And you accumulate it.
That's right. So annual leave is accumulated day to day, week to week, year to year, and it's paid out on termination or separation.
Right.
So even if it's not used, you will never lose it, which is quite different to sick leave, which, again, accrues day to day, week to week, year to year. But if you're terminated with 52 weeks sick leave, having worked a very long and healthy life, that entitlement's gone. Sick leave is there to help you when you're sick and not to kind of build up a cash bank.
Charlie, who's a FIFO employee manager in WA, has texted us saying, in relation to the case you're talking about, the truck driver, the worker was employed by a recruitment agency, not Rio directly, if I understand it. If Rio Tinto were not committing to the agency long term, what options does the agency really have? Well, I guess that's a fair point, isn't it?
The
agency only has work if Rio gives it work. The agency can only offer the truck driver work if Rio gives the agency work.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing more, and I don't know what the engagement was between Rio and that agency in this, I don't know. But I think the point is that there was predictability of work and shifts and rosters, it seems, for this gentleman. And certainly that varies in case to case.
Sick leave. You can get more than 4 weeks annual leave, but you can't get less, okay?
That's exactly right. So lots of shift workers will get 6 weeks, for example. So
yeah.
you may have a higher accrual if you're a shifty.
Yeah. Sick leave. How much sick leave is the minimum?
So it's prorated if you're part-time, but 10 days is the national standard. And you can take it... it's quite interesting. You can take it either as sick leave, that is, you might be sick 10 days, you might take 10 lots of one day, you might take 10 days in a row, but it's also there to use for carer's leave. So it's also there when a member of your immediate family or your immediate household is sick and they need to be cared for. So it's kind of a dual entitlement, if you like.
So it's basically 10 days for you to use pretty much as you wish.
No. Nice try, Phil. We'd all love that sick leave. No. So you do need to be sick, or you do need to have those carer's commitments, and you do need to provide evidence
of that. Sorry, my kid was sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, who's got evidence of that?
Well, you may need to take your kid to the doctor. If an employer questions that, it may be that you need to provide a statutory declaration or to provide the medical certificate from taking your child to the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so sick leave 10 days, and does that accrue if you don't take it? It accrues, does it?
That's exactly right. It's
does it accrue indefinitely?
Yes, that's right. That is, it doesn't fall away or evaporate when you get to 10 years, 12 years or anything. Okay. So it accrues. And for many people, well, I see a lot of people who've been in the workplace a really long time and who will have taken nothing and then will suffer some sort of a breakdown or some sort of very serious illness. And that sick leave, having accrued for that long period of time, is incredibly important for them to just kind of survive and pay the bills.
Carer's leave. The National Employment Standard also says there is a thing called carer's leave. What's that?
So that's just what I was talking about before.
The same as sick leave, is it?
Yes, that's exactly right. And I think the thing to know that even casuals get 2 days of unpaid carer's leave a year. So if that child is sick, they can take that and access that entitlement.
Redundancy pay. What are you entitled to?
Yeah, redundancy pay is really interesting. So it kind of falls into, well, I think it's interesting because I'm a workplace law nerd. Mm. It falls into two buckets. So when you're made redundant, you will get paid notice, and that can be anywhere between 1 and 5 weeks, just depending upon how long you've been in employment for and whether you're over 45 years of age. Uh-huh. I'm sorry, if you've been there for less than 1 year, you don't get any notice. No, that's redundancy. Anyway, and redundancy entitled to anywhere between 4 and 16 weeks, again, just depending upon how long you've been in employment for. They're the minimum. Mm-hmm. That's what sits in the National Employment Standards. But in addition to that, many people will have far greater entitlements under their contracts or under an enterprise agreement. So in some workplaces, or indeed in a policy, so in some workplaces there could be up to 52 weeks of severance pay, depending upon how long you've been employed. And we regularly see notice periods that are anywhere between 3 to 6 months within a contract. So the first answer I gave you is that bottom foundation level in regulation in Australia.
Mm. Okay, notice of termination. They have to give you notice.
They do, in writing.
The national standards say, yeah, they have to give you notice. How much?
That's exactly right. So that's what I was just talking about. So anywhere between 1 to 5 weeks, depending upon your age and how long you've been employed for.
All right. But if you're a casual, you get none of these things.
That's right.
Lynn from Werribee's with us. Hello, Lynn.
How are you going?
No, I'm very well, thanks.
This is quite timely, actually. I've been a casual for 13 years.
Right.
And we had a meeting a week and a half ago, just before the school holidays started. And they're changing all our work conditions, whereby we used to be picked up from home and dropped back off at home. We actually worked for a bus company whereby we take kids to and from school.
Mm-hmm.
But they decided that we have to meet them down at the depot, which means we have to drive through all the traffic from Werribee into Footscray every day in the morning. And then.
So you drive the bus, do you, Lynn?
No, just a chaperone.
Okay.
Look after the children.
Right.
But we're casual, obviously. But the boss had a meeting with us and told us that our work conditions will be changing and that we'll have to meet the bus at the depot and clock on and then come out to Werribee, do our run, go back to Footscray, then come back home again, then go back in there again for the afternoon shift. And said, if you don't like it, then the door's over there. So a few people... A lot of us didn't like it, obviously.
Mm.
Two have already left. Not sure what I'm going to be doing, but yeah.
Alex, what's the story here? For 13 years, they've been doing the same.
13 years doing the same jobs, same shift every day. same hours.
Firstly, Lynn, can I say that's a fairly...
It's actually heartbreaking because...
Yeah, I bet it is. It's devastating when things like this happen. It's also pretty devastating to still be called a casual after 13 years.
And actually, I spoke to the boss, rang me Friday morning and asked me how I was. And I said, I'm not real good, actually, after the meeting on... Monday morning, and after the meeting on Friday. And he said, oh, why is that? And I said, just the way he spoke to people wasn't very nice. He said, I wish I had have recorded the meeting. I said, well, actually, it was recorded. So
Lynn, a couple of things there. I think you should put your concerns in writing in relation to the proposed change. You don't need to agree to a change to your working conditions. And then I think there's kind of two other points. If you were then terminated because you had refused to change your working conditions and because you'd made a complaint about them, you could go to the Fair Work Commission. You may...
I actually rang them last week and they said that we've got a really good case. But there's people that have actually left already because they can't deal with being treated that way, you know?
I absolutely understand that. So just a couple more things. So just to know, you've got 21 days to file an unfair dismissal claim or a general protections claim in the Fair Work Commission from the time of the termination. It's not long at all.
They haven't actually terminated us.
No, I understand that. What they're saying is that, you know, you can...
You don't really have a choice,
Don't resign. What I would say to you is never resign in these situations. Try and resolve the situation. If they ultimately terminate you, then you have those rights. And because you've been employed as a casual regularly and systematically, you're one of the casuals that can actually access the Fair Work Commission unfair dismissal regime, and you've been there for a very long time working regular shifts. So that is something that's available to you. The other thing, talk to a union. If you're not a member of a union, it's probably time to become one. And I would have thought that all those people should be trying to join together and see if they can get some sort of collective outcome.
That too, but there's a lot of people who that frightens that they're going to lose their job, that they, you know, that's where they think they've got you. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of people that have really...
All right. Well, Lynn, you've got some options there going forward. I mean, good luck with it. I mean, and thanks for telling us your own situation. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Lynn. Good luck.
Bye. But in general, don't resign, you'd say.
In general, don't resign. So... Whilst if you resign your employment, you may be able to argue unfair dismissal, you need to prove that you had no choice but to resign, and that is very difficult. It's been labelled by the Fair Work Commission as a stringent test. So my view is always don't resign.
Okay. Andrew, hello.
G'day, how are you going? Look, Andrew's an alias. I don't want it to affect the business.
Yeah.
But... as a business employs four women, and they are between 20 and 35, so of childbearing age.
Mm-hmm.
Those women get pregnant, we pay maternity leave and have to employ other people. Business goes bust, we lose the house. It really is that simple. That's why they're casual. If it weren't for that, if there was a different system, such as Mr. Rabbit's system, whereby there was a tax on employment and the ladies were then paid their wage through the welfare system, then those ladies would all have permanent part-time jobs.
That's interesting, Andrew, because under the National Employment Standards, there isn't a requirement to pay for parental leave. There's an entitlement to 12 months of unpaid parental leave. So does that paid parental leave sit in some modern award or enterprise agreement, perhaps?
As far as we're aware, from what we've looked up, there is paid maternity leave.
I think that's worth checking. I really do, because I don't think that any of... Well, look, off the top of my head, I don't remember any of the modern awards having paid parental leave. So it would have to be part of a contract or part of an enterprise agreement. And if you're a small business, it's probably unlikely that you've entered into one. So I do think that's worth checking, Andrew, with the Fair Work Ombudsman, because you might be able to offer those women that wonderful permanency that gives them some sense of
I'll have another look.
Fantastic. Yep. Look, I think that's great. And they would then be entitled to the paid parental leave scheme potentially from the government, but that's a separate 18 weeks payment that doesn't come out of Andrew's pocket.
Might be worth a look, Andrew.
have another look.
Yep. Yeah, great. Thanks, Andrew.
Good on you. But so by and large, you're entitled. You can't give people the sack for getting pregnant.
That's right, you cannot.
You have to give them leave, but you don't have to pay them.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So those women that Andrew employs, if one of them does get pregnant, he has to say, "Well, look, you can have your job back when you want to come back."
That's exactly right.
But I don't have to pay you while you're away.
Yeah, there's a return to work guarantee while somebody's on parental
leave.
Well,
that's a bit different from what he's saying, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. Yeah, it is. So he may well find that what he's obliged to pay or provide is nothing, but that he does need to hold their job open for a year, but not compensating them, and he can then afford to replace them and pay for somebody else for a year.
Yeah. Steve, hello.
Yeah, g'day, Philip. G'day, Alex.
Hello, Steve.
G'day. I find today, like, I'm an older person, not necessarily wiser, but the way the workforce, the workplace laws have changed to viciousness. You heard Lynn, and then you heard that employer. He had to come under an alias name. You know, they're both in fear. You know, this is the... And you have to be a lawyer, you know, somebody of brilliance like yourself, Alex, just to get your head around them. There was a very good article in Today's Herald by Professor Judith Bassant entitled The Future of Work Will Not Be Full-Time, which is killing permanent work across this country. I hear Professor Bassant's work. It was published in Today's Sydney Morning Herald in an article by her, under the title, The Future of Work Will Not Be Full-Time. And everyone seems to keep pushing this full-time work. Full-time work, Alex, has been wiped out across the country because the employers have got to have their boot on the necks of every employee in the country. And if you say boo, you're gone. And by the way, I was on the... unfortunately, I had to go through unfair dismissal myself. It was an awful time I went through. I cannot comment on it. You know, like, why can't I comment on it, Alex? Mm. You know, why can't the results of every unfair work dismissal be published in all our papers?
Fair enough. All right, Steve, let's get Alex's comment about it.
Yeah, Alex? Certainly. Look, I think that I think Steve's absolutely right. I think that there has been a real shift away from that job for life, you know, the corporate man. Well, hopefully that's changed to being the corporate man or woman. But that I really think there has been this increased reliance on casual employment by employers across Australia. And we're forgetting that if you can have part-time employment, that is, if an employer has a need for one shift a week, two shifts a week, you can engage part-time employees. So I think Steve is right. I think that there has been a real imbalance and a real move away from power on behalf of workers, and we've seen the deunionisation of the workforce as well, and that certainly hasn't helped. Just in terms of the unfair dismissal question that Steve raised as well, so if there has been a decision of the Fair Work Commission or the Industrial Relations Commission of New South Wales or wherever, if it's gone to arbitration, it's gone to hearing, there will be published reasons that will be available on websites. But it may be that Steve has entered into what we call a deed of release or a settlement agreement, which has those confidentiality terms or non-disparagement terms in them, which means that he's bound to secrecy about them. So it may well be that situation for Steve.
Okay, let's get to some other queries. Sam, hello.
Hello, how are you going?
Not bad.
My inquiry is, I work as a cook in a very busy fast food roadhouse type situation. Eight plus hours a day. Now, we don't get meal breaks. We are told that if we're a smoker, we can go for a 5-minute cigarette every so often, but we don't have a meal break at all.
What, during an 8-hour shift?
Yes.
Sam, that just can't be right. Sorry, I'm not saying that's not what's happening to you, but what I'm saying is I don't believe that is lawful. And that industry is quite heavily regulated. I think there might even be a fast food modern award.
Yes.
I believe that would have set in stone. As I said, there are over 111 of them, and I don't know the provisions of each one. But I would be very surprised if that award did not have meal breaks in it.
Well, I've looked into the award, yes, and it does have a you know, allowance for that.
And you can't contract out of the award if it applies to your industry and your classification. I really think that might be worth a call to the Fair Work Ombudsman for you, Sam. That doesn't sound right.
So you're saying that the award, you've looked at it, Sam, and there are meal breaks in the award. It's just that your employer is not letting you have them.
So you may have a significant underpayment claim, Sam, or you may have, and also a breach of an award claim, which can give rise to penalties against your employer. And I also think that's a real health and safety concern.
Yeah.
That must be terrible. How do you end up concentrating by the end of the day, especially when you're saying that you're a cook, so you're wielding large knives? I certainly wouldn't want you wielding a large knife in a kitchen near me or my fingers after 8 hours without a break. So I do think that is something that's worth exploring and at least calling the Fair Work Ombudsman and seeing if they've got an interest in that.
Yeah, this is a business that's changed hands several times in the last 10 years, and each new owner has adhered to the previous arrangement, and the staff have just had to basically comply.
And you've got 6 years.
It sounds as though you've got some rights, Sam.
Yeah, and you've got 6 years to make an underpayment claim, Sam. So just because you
and
haven't done
do
something
I talk
about
to
it.
About that?
I would start with the Fair Work Ombudsman, and they're doing a lot within the fast food and the retail industry. There's been some news stories about various burger chains and pizza chains and stuff who've done similar stuff. So give the Fair Work Ombudsman a call and see if you get any joy there and join a union.
Yes, well, I looked up the website and our employers put on our notice board when we were entitled to a 15-minute break, and there was two columns, you know, one for the juniors who did 4 hours or whatever, and the third column, which was on the website, was left out on our notice board.
The other thing
when
it's worth,
we had our half-hour meal break.
So, Sam, just the other thing to keep, and for all employees out there, take photos of your rosters. It's one thing that people often don't even think about doing. They just turn up and they do their shift and they don't track those rosters and they don't track and take an image of it and write a diary, no lunch break today, Monday the 3rd. Tuesday
luckily
the 4th.
Luckily with the technology, our roster is posted on our, we have a website, so it's all there.
And does it remain there for 6 years, Sam? Just something to think about.
This one would only be 3 years.
Yeah, okay.
Take action, Sam. Looks as though you've got some rights.
Thank you so much for your help.
Thanks,
no worries.
Sam.
Bye-bye. Jason's got an inquiry about his wife's long service leave. Yes, Jason?
Yeah, good evening. My wife's long service leave has come up, and she thought she was of the opinion that we could sort of break it into as many pieces as she wanted. So she took a first bite of 4 days to pop up from holiday she took.
Mm-hmm.
Then she took 2 weeks, and then she came back and she was informed that she must take all her long service in a maximum of 3 bites. And I'm wondering whether that is lawful.
What state are you in, Jason?
Queensland.
I'm so sorry. I don't know the answer to that. There is different long service leave legislation in each state of Australia. So I'm really sorry. I operate in New South Wales and I just don't know. Mm. And I don't want to give you some sort of pet answer. I'm just thinking who you could contact about that. There may be an Office of Industrial Relations in Queensland. It doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound...
In general terms, though, are you allowed to do what... I mean, with long service leave, you may recruit, say, 3 months or 6 months.
Mm.
Can you take it in, you know, 2 days here, 2 days there?
I can't think of any prescription on that off the top of my head.
Right.
But, again, it may well be that there is something within the New South Wales Long Service Leave Act that I'm just not aware of.
Mm. Okay. Sorry, Jason, we don't have an answer to that at the moment. Richard, hello.
Oh, hi, Philip. Hi, Alex. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Philip.
Look, I just wanted to relate an experience I had. I was working recently with a local government department up here in Queensland, and I was a casual, but through a labour hire company.
Mm-hmm.
I was dismissed after 6.5 months, I believe unfairly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tried to seek a remedy for unfair dismissal, but it was very complicated whether to seek it through Fair Work Fair Work Commission, going from the agency, the Labor Hire Agency, or through the, in my case, the Queensland Industrial Relations Commission, naming the council as my employer. The council said they weren't my employer. The Labor Hire Company said, we haven't dismissed him. He's still on our books. We're still looking for work for him. And it went nowhere. Basically, I had phone conferences with both the Queensland Industrial Relations Commission and the Fair Work Australia, and I ended up going nowhere. They kind of intimidated me into withdrawing it, sort of downplaying my chances of success or compensation, and sort of warning me that I could be liable to legal costs, to pay their legal costs, whatever. I don't know. I just withdrew, but it was just a complete schmozzle. It's disgusting. It really is.
And Philip, that's kind of one of the most complicated situations in Richard, an unfair dismissal.
Richard, we're talking to, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was Philip.
No, Richard.
Sorry, Philip. Sorry,
that's
Richard.
All right. Yeah, no worries.
Yeah, I think that's a really complicated legal question, and when you haven't been there for so long, I completely understand. It's interesting, in unfair dismissals, often the compensatory outcome will vary depending on how long you've been there for. So I think you said you'd only been there for 6.5 months.
Correct.
Or something on those lines. In that situation where you haven't been there for that long, when it is really complicated, I can really understand your kind of decision to withdraw. In most unfair dismissal jurisdictions across Australia, though, it is really hard to be liable for costs. So most of the time you're stuck with your own legal costs, but most of the time they're stuck with theirs as well. But it's very, very complicated in exactly your situation.
Mm.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Hope there's another good job on the horizon.
Yeah, thank you. Robbie and Tassie. Hello, Rob.
Hi. Look, I work for a company in New South Wales, and it was a call centre, and we were told that we had to be there 15 minutes before our shift started, but they didn't pay you for it. So where do you stand with that?
Yeah, it would depend upon the modern award, the contract. My preliminary view is that, it doesn't sound right. That is that you've attended for work and you should be paid for
it. So they were saying, you have to turn up at 8:45, but you don't actually get paid until 9.
Yeah.
No, that's right. And when I queried it, I was told that I shouldn't forget that I get paid to go to the toilet.
Oh, call centres. I've heard that before as well. Yeah, I've heard that before. Look, it just depends upon the agreement. But my first view is that doesn't sound right, but it also is reasonably common. To me, you've turned up for work and you're performing work and they've required you to attend.
That's right. And the reality is they don't pay you until your shift starts, and you've got to be there at least 15 minutes before to be able to start your shift on time.
And are you just kind of hanging around, Robbie? Just kind of waiting?
No, you have to log on.
See, I'm just wondering, Robbie, is it any different, though, from someone, I don't know, who works in a factory doing a process? I mean, you have to get there before you actually start, because you have to.
15 minutes sounds like a long time, especially kind of in your telling me that you're logging on and everything, Robbie.
That's
so
right. It was to get onto the system, to be able to get to a starting
point. Oh, no, forget that. Isn't it, Alex? Come on.
I like it. I like it. I think I'd like to run that.
Honestly, everything was just so not Australian.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I think it's kind of, that's the type of case that if somebody came to me, I'd say, oh, it's a grey area, but I wouldn't mind taking it on. That's the type of case.
Right, okay.
But it sounds like you've moved on, Robbie. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, well, I kind of got told the first time that my supervisor met me, he said to me, you're going to be really sorry you got me.
Yeah.
And that's because I'm an older person with grey hair.
Oh, so Robbie, two things I want to talk to you about there is that there is potentially age discrimination where somebody has been treated less favourably than other employees because of their age or their fantastic grey hair.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that Australians, the majority of Australians have access to the anti-bullying jurisdiction of the Fair Work Commission, and you can go down there when somebody says things like that to you repeatedly. I think that would fall within the category of being unreasonable. And you can go down to the Fair Work Commission and persuade the commission that you should get anti-bullying orders. That's if it's creating a risk to your health and safety. So,
well, it was to the point where I've resigned.
Oh,
so, well, and
I'm very sorry to hear that.
There were a number of things. I also, I was looking for work this day and asking for work, and I got told that I should be really grateful because I could be sitting on the lounge at home looking for a job. That's what he said to me.
Not much joy, Robbie. All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Robbie.
Thanks for the call as well. 1-300-800-222. We're talking with Alex Grayson, our employment lawyer, about entitlements. How can you track overtime hours and or conditions in a professional job, says my texter. I work as a lecturer at a university. Previously to the earlier caller, never get a lunch break, but they're not scheduled into our time. It's all pretty fluid. I work 70 to 90 hours a week, and it's impacting my health.
Okay.
What should they do?
So I think the question was how to track it. I think keep a daily diary.
Keep a diary.
Yeah. Of the hours that you're working. If you're logging on and off to your computer, then there will be a kind of cyber record. Mm-hmm. If you have to access buildings, there will also potentially be a record via passes. But with academics, they work crazy hours often at home, which does make it hard to track. So, again, I think that kind of diary is one of the ways to do it. For other people, taking photographs of rosters. In theory, the National Employment Standards provide that we should all be working 38 hours a week or reasonable additional hours.
Mm.
To me, 90 hours a week. And those reasonable additional hours will vary from organisations.
Plenty of people are working more than that.
It's more than double what the legislation kind of provides for as the baseline, though.
Mm.
That said, it's kind of harder in professional environments. He's absolutely right to track that or to establish what is reasonable or unreasonable. But that's a long way away from 38 hours.
Mm. Make a diary, by the sound of it, is a good start. Now, Adam's been waiting on for a bit. Sorry, Adam, you've been waiting on there.
How are you?
Not bad.
Hello, Adam.
Oh, hi. I don't want to waste your time, but I've injured myself at work and I'm self-employed. I've got a 30-day wait with my sickness accident insurance and I can't do my job because of my injury, but I can only get a 1 week doctor certificate.
Is that so, right?
So the doctor's sort of saying that I'm capable of working, but I don't think the doctor has got the scope of what I do for work. So I've got surgery and I've got to put the surgery in a bucket of water with a sponge.
Oh gosh.
And lift tiles up and then I'm sort of like, you know, I need to take, you know, I've got a fracture and I need to take time off to let it heal.
With a back injury, maybe you need to see.
It's more of a surgery sort of thing. It's only a digit on my hand.
Hmm. Right.
It's not like, you know, it looks like, yeah, just go to work, but I'm not really capable of doing my job. It's affecting my income.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't get a more than a week certificate off a doctor.
So I have to say, Adam, that I don't practice in workers' compensation and you may need to speak to a workers' compensation lawyer. I understand you're kind of self-insured, so that's obviously,
yeah,
I think,
yeah,
even
I
more worry. Complicated.
I don't really want to go through the builders. I haven't signed a contract or anything with them.
I don't want to.
Do you know what I mean? Like, he's sort of, I should have my own insurance, which I have.
Yes, I think.
It was my choice to choose a 30-day wait, you know, but it's just, the injury's gone on now for 8 months, 9 months. Do you know what I mean? I'm trying to work and keep my employer, and I'm pretty much not capable of doing my job.
Mm. Any thoughts, Alex?
I think to maybe see a different doctor and see if you can get a better, longer medical certificate once you've given them kind of more information, if that would help. I'm sorry, Adam, it's just you're in a bit of a difficult situation. Maybe looking at if you have any superannuation policies and seeing if there's any assistance that you could get in your superannuation policy. A lot of people have income protection now, because you're self-employed, you may or may not have that. But they're kind of some of the things that come to mind, and just looking into workers' compensation and whether there's any claim that you can make in relation to the head contractor, perhaps.
Okay. Jerry in Orange says, it sounds like the national employment standards have been breached in many of the last calls. Can an agreement nullify the national employment standard?
So you can't contract out of the national employment standards other than how they, like, some of the national employment standards will say you can have a provision of a modern award that allows for X, Y, or Z to happen. So if you like, the national employment standards will set the very limited ways in which you can contract out of them. For example, you can cash out your annual leave if there's a provision in a modern award that says that
if
you can.
If the award says you can.
That's exactly right. So, yes, in some ways you can contract out of them, but really only if the Act itself says how you can do that.
Okay. Mandy's on the line from Gippsland. Hello, Mandy.
I'm just ringing up about being a casual and whether you're entitled to long service leave.
Yeah, so certainly in New South Wales you are. I don't know if that is the same across the country, Mandy, but...
is that right? Casuals are entitled to long service leave.
It's one of the few things they're actually entitled to in New South Wales.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but I don't know the answer in Gippsland, yes.
All right. Yeah. It's just for argument's sake, if you are entitled to it, even if it's New South Wales, if you take 3 months off, say, because you've had some serious health issue, but you've been kept on the books, does that cancel out your long service leave, and then when you go back to work, you start again, or...?
No, so 3 months unpaid, I'm assuming.
Yeah,
so you don't... So, again, different from state to state, but
sure.
you don't accrue long service leave while you're on unpaid leave.
No, but you...
But you shouldn't... go back to zero.
Yeah,
no. But casuals are pretty, it's just because it's so unpredictable, it's a bit harder to kind of
sure.
map that.
Yeah.
But, 3 months off, no sick leave, that's a bit challenging, Mandy.
Yes, but anyway, that's how it was.
Okay.
Actually, I've had a couple of goes at doing that, and they've been very good at work, and they've kept me on.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And that's the way it should be. You certainly shouldn't be treated differently or discriminated against because you've got a workers' compensation injury or because you have a disability, which includes temporary disabilities like sore backs and stuff.
Mm.
Sure.
Righto, Mandy. Thank you.
Thanks, Mandy.
Thanks, Mandy. We'll take one last one. Gordon, hello.
G'day, Philip and Alex.
Hello, how are you, Gordon,
Gordon, yes. Well, your question, Gordon?
Look, I've been signing casual engagement forms for the last 20 years, every 6 months.
Okay, yep.
Yeah. Basically, they've said I shouldn't expect to get a living from it. That's just come in the last 6 months. I just wonder, you know, how long can you be a casual for? I do shift work. It could be... any time that, you know, any day. And, you know, I'm probably more permanent part-time, but to get to that level, I'm just not sure whether I should be talking to the union. I spoke to them 5 years ago and they said, oh, look, you earn enough money as a freelancer. Why would you be bothering? I work for a very large corporation
in the
entertainment industry.
Okay, so let's just get an answer because we're running out of time.
Yeah. I can see that clock ticking. I'm so glad you asked that question, Gordon, because come 1 October 2018, there will be casual conversion clauses in all modern awards. They've been in some modern awards up until now. I can think of the pharmacy industry off the top of my head. And what that means is where somebody who is a casual is regularly engaged as a casual. So essentially if they have regular shifts and they've been there for more than 12 months, then they can apply to their employer to be transferred to being a full-time or a part-time employee. And that can only be denied on reasonable business grounds. So that actually gives people like you, Gordon, a right, assuming that you have a modern award that covers you. But as I said, they do cover a considerable chunk of the industries in Australia. And I personally think that's a really good thing because to be a casual for so long is quite incredible.
Yeah. Okay. You should look into it by the sound of it, Gordon. Thank you. Alex, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Time flies when we're having fun.
We do.
As it always does. Alex Grayson is an employment lawyer with Maurice Blackburn Solicitors.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.